Hello and welcome to Chat Shit Get Well. Today I'm joined with Jen McKenzie. I'm going to talk about her journey in getting diagnosed with ADHD and autism.
Yep.
Tell me how it all started. And I know you've been through a rough ride.
I have been through the mill, yeah, in my life. Yeah. So, I've been through so much trauma, but also, so much transformation as well and triumphs. There's all intertwined in my journey, you know, like life is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Through of ups and downs. But I never fitted in anywhere. Never felt like I belonged anywhere. I was always misunderstood and I was bullied at school. Mm. I didn't want to be at school. Absolutely hated it. It was hell on earth.
Did you hate it because of the bullying or did you hate it for I didn't fit in and just felt out of place? Yeah.
It was loud. It was, the structure. It was friendships, forming friendships. It was all very, very confusing to me.
Yeah.
All I wanted to do was be outside, with my horses, up stables, or I wanted to be just doing my own thing. I quite liked being by myself. And my mum said I was a really active child. So she had to keep me busy all the time.
Because you had so much energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did. I had so much energy. But then once I got into school and that, I was quite anxious and I've always been a really highly sensitive person anyway. So any sort of change in someone's energy or their facial expressions, I really pick that up.
Right.
And I always had this gift really to read between the lines of when someone's energy would change, I would see something that was deeper beneath their surface sort of thing. But I wouldn't always recognise sort of standard social cues and things like that and what was deemed acceptable in society. So my mum was quite embarrassed of me. Because okay. I would just go through someone's cupboards or something.
Yeah, that's one of the signs.
Because, I'll tell you a story. We were at this, I don't really remember it, but my mum told me it. So we're at this person's house and I'd just disappeared. I was in the bathroom because I found bath pearls. You remember those?
Oh, I love them. Back in the day. Yeah, I used to play them all the time.
So I'd really got in this sensory moment of, and I didn't know what was going on.
It didn't mean no harm.
I was just squeezing them and then the sensation of it. I remember that and the stuff coming out of them. So I basically squeezed and ruined all of this woman's bath pearls. My mum was just highly embarrassed. I was labelled then difficult. I was labelled, naughty. I ran away from school in year four. And the police had to be called.
What age is year four? That's
eight.
Eight, yeah. So mm-hmm. That's super young.
Yeah, because what happened is my normal teacher, my safety teacher, I got on really well and with him, he was ill. So we had to have this other woman, which I did not like. And I just said, I'm not having her.
Yeah.
And I, at lunchtime, sneaked out the gates and went off. Roped in a couple of other girls to come with me.
Yeah.
And then I was the bad person. I got banned from seeing people,
Oh, really?
So, yeah. And
obviously you're not understanding mm-hmm. the boundaries of what is expected sort of thing. But in your own little, escapism.
I didn't understand. I didn't want to do it. So why do I do it? Why do I have to do it?
I think that's a fair point. Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I genuinely don't. I don't think, that's how I live my life. If I don't want to do it, I don't want to do it. But we expect it from children. Yeah. We expect children to stay in uncomfortable situations, to sit in the norm and and that's what's difficult with schooling system,
mm-hmm.
especially with someone that's having sensory, experiences and stuff.
So my confidence I went from a really outgoing child that wanted to do dance and drama and be expressive and creative to being bullied for doing that, and I became then painfully shy, painfully shy, and I was like, the world is not safe. Nothing felt safe.
Because they're telling you you're wrong constantly, putting you down and saying, you shouldn't be expressive and you shouldn't want to do these things. Yeah.
Yeah. So there is some statistics, I can't remember them because I can't remember anything, but there is statistics that neurodiverse or neurodivergent people are exposed to more negative comments and that by the time that they're a certain age. So imagine all of that stuff being put upon me as a child that I'm wrong and then my feelings being denied constantly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I saw something on Instagram recently about the lady that wrote Cats. So she was in school. She was naughty. She was running away from school. The school called her and said, you need to go and see this doctor because you're not behaving. You're a naughty child. And the doctor said, take her to a performing arts school.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment from that doctor saying, she's not naughty.
Yeah.
She's a performer. Because he said he had the radio on and he could see her dancing the whole time. Mm-hmm. And he said, she's a performer. And from that moment on, that completely changed her life. She's like, I mean, look at what she's known for now. Oh. And if someone had overlooked that and gone, she's just a naughty child and kept putting her down and down and down, that musical would never have been written. Yeah.
And I'm really creative with words. So now I've come full circle a little bit. So I write spoken word and poetry and I started performing that.
That's so
I found it really cathartic and healing for me because I talk about a lot of the stuff that I've been through. I talk about, what it's like being... trying to fit in as an autistic person. So I really love expressing that, and I keep getting braver and braver and putting it out there. And
but it takes someone like you to do that, because then it makes other people realize it's okay to do that. I've written spoken word for a long time. I've never performed any of it, but I agree with you. I find it a very good way to express and journal as well for myself. So what happened when you left school? I mean, did you go through the schooling system till you were 16 or?
I bumped off for most of it. Like, I forged letters.
Yeah, we were so good at that at school.
I was very entrepreneurial, and then I realised, I can do this signature. So I then got people
fraud at like 12.
Yeah. I got people to pay me to sign them out of school. So excellent. I was earning money, hustle. I'd buy fags at the shop and then I'd sell them for
singly. And someone tells you that's wrong. That's nothing wrong with that. That's being a businesswoman.
I'd get them to pay me to do stupid dares, like eat a fly or something like that. Come on, just give me your money.
Yeah, you knew how to earn the bucks.
But I just spent it all on drugs. So.
Right, yeah.
At that time.
And that's the thing, if you don't know, if you haven't got that creativity channeled properly to say, oh, actually, you could be really successful, then someone say, actually, you're really bad. And go, well, I'm just going to go get high then. Fuck you.
Yeah. So I found escapism. And really, when I started to then, have romantic relationships and stuff, I was just awkward. Awkward, painfully shy. Someone would look at me, I'd go bright red or something like that. And I found alcohol and it became my superpower straight away.
Gave you that confidence.
Yep. Nothing else mattered. I could be... Then more shame came because people were like, oh my God, you turn into a different person. And I was like, I could be just weird and like wacky and
get
like
away with it.
Eccentric. But I could just be me. There weren't any inhibitions and stuff. And I went to a lot of like illegal raves and things like that. So I'd be experimenting with ecstasy and lots of drugs.
What age was that then?
14.
14, wow. Illegal raves at 14.
And I was in and out of the criminal system and for shoplifting, burglary. I didn't get caught for some of the bigger stuff that I did, which let's not talk about.
Yeah, don't know if you still get done for it. Yeah, exactly, talk about it.
But let's just say, I'm glad that the petty stuff was on the record.
Yeah. So this petty stuff you get caught for,
not the serious stuff. But later, and I did get done for GBH and stuff like that. But I hold a lot of shame around things like that, I found escapism and I found comfort in being high and with music.
Yeah.
Yeah. And often people would be like, well, where did you go? Because I would just wander off by myself and I'd be next to the speaker and I'd be dancing and I'd be completely in my own world.
Yeah.
And because I felt safe there.
Yeah.
Drugs and alcohol and music were my safety. And that was... probably the thing that for a long, long time.
It labelled you to like be yourself really and just present yourself in your expressive ways without being seen as weird, I suppose, in a way. Because obviously we all do weird things when we're drunk. So it's like, okay, well, I can be weird when I'm drunk.
And
you can do that when you're sober as well now. You're allowed
almost
to.
Almost like permission, but now I'm just...
why are you dancing if you're sober? Why are you dancing next to a speaker like this? They'll go, that's weird. But if you're drunk, perfectly fine. So... But you know, it's become.
I'm just totally weird. And
I'm just. I'm weird really too. Now I don't. I literally don't care. I used to be the same though. Yeah. You know, I used to hide it under this mask of alcohol and drugs and stuff. Do you know what I mean? But now I'm just. I'm just weird without alcohol. I don't need it.
Embrace the weird. Let it be free.
So well, I mean, you obviously. I mean, you said before to me personally that you had. Then it's sort of become a bit of a problem with drugs and alcohol, more than just like a socialisation thing.
I mean, I smoked crack since I was 14, right? You know, and I was mixing in circles, organised crime and things like that. So it took me to
where
some
are you
really
from,
dark,
sorry?
Bedford.
Oh, Bedford. Wow, that's not even that far, is it?
No, it's down there.
Yeah, Jesus.
So it took me to some really dark places and I've seen a lot of stuff and a lot of things have happened to me because of, you know, the environments that I was in. So I've got 25 stitches in my face and my tooth got knocked out, like, by a guy at a party because I said no. Right. And then I humiliated him in front of everyone. So, you know, he didn't like that.
No.
But, you know, I talk about this. I've talked about it on one of the episodes of my podcast and it's the episodes of Bad Girl Turned Good. So it's all these things that I held so much shame around that actually I really want to talk about, not because I think they were right and it wasn't my fault. I'm taking full responsibility for my life and my journey, but I didn't know I was neurodiverse.
Yeah.
So the impulsivity, like the risk-taking behaviour, the trusting in people that do not have your best interests in, you know, and stuff like that. So there's some stuff that I had to go back and forgive myself for. And I first tried to take my life in when I was 15, 16, and I started self-harming around that time as well. Because I just didn't deal with my emotions. I didn't understand and I just felt completely misunderstood. So that was a way for me to be in control. Drugs, alcohol and self-harming and stuff like that, it was a way for me to take back control when I felt completely just alone and like I was the only person going through this. And I didn't get any help or support from the mental health system or anything like that.
And how did your family cope with that? Transition of, you know, being basically they're just like, she's a naughty teenager, I suppose that's the view they've got. She's just a naughty
bad
teenager
behavior.
She's a naughty kid that's going out and rebelling, I suppose. Really, that's how, probably how they just felt about it, not really understanding them with something else going on in the background. And I mean, back then we weren't talking about these things like we are now either. So
not at all, not at all. And you know, it's those dark places that it took me. And then I'd been in some domestic abusive relationships and stuff as well. And, you know, I wound up in hospital, my knee dislocated, my elbow dislocated, you know, marks around my throat, like thrown down the stairs, like a concussion. You know, I'm surprised I'm here.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah.
I'm surprised I'm still alive through three attempts at taking my own life and then people where I've feared for my life in situations where I could have very easily have been killed at the hands of a perpetrator.
Yeah.
Mm.
So when you obviously had attempted to make attempts on your own life, you're saying the mental health system wasn't sort of assisting you. What was the process that happened after those attempts that were made?
I remember being in hospital after I took an overdose as a teenager and they just asked me a few questions and then I just went home and got on with it. So I've always been this person that just gets up, gets on with it. You've got to keep going. You've got to keep going. You've got to keep going. And I suppose that's where the resilience and the strength comes in. But I was also hiding behind the inner turmoil that I was feeling. So the duality of my journey is that dark side also had so much achievement. I had so many achievements, you know.
Because you kept coming back,
I was a landlady of two pubs at 18.
Wow.
You know, I had my own beauty salon. Like I've any job that I had, I would excel in. I wouldn't last because I'd get bored. or I'd get asked to leave.
I know that feeling.
I'd get asked to leave because I'll start telling them about themselves, right? Please, yeah. Can you leave quietly, you know? And I've thrown chairs across the office and stuff like that because
And you're obviously doing this alongside having an alcohol and the addiction that you had going on as well, and you're still functioning and everything's...
Yeah, so because yeah, obviously your mental health is... I was high functioning, neurodivergent. I was high functioning addict, and I was completely unaware of what neurodiverse was. I got diagnosed with OCD, got diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I had panic attacks. I've got PTSD from all the trauma and things like that. Yeah. And it wasn't until I was 40 years old, after all of this stuff, that I finally kind of got this. So it's called a diagnosis, but I've started reframing it and calling it a discovery because I discovered I was not broken.
Yeah.
I was neurodiverse, neurodivergent. And it was like, my whole life kind of made sense, you know? And it took me all of that time to actually be seen and heard and understood.
What led you to be, I know you said you didn't get your discovery until you're 40, so what happened in that time? I mean, had you gone through, 40 years of battling this? Yeah. And then what happened? What was the turning point that made you, did someone tell you about it? Or
so I became homeless, right, as well.
Right. Okay.
Because this high functioning, let's just rewind a minute, right, this high functioning lifestyle and just pushing all your emotions down, ignoring it all and just... I'm fine. It's the classic Ross and Friends, isn't it? I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I'm not fine inside. But it was that. And that was not sustainable. That is not sustainable to live like that for a long period of time in high stress, high cortisol, and just pretending that everything's okay, because you imagine it like a pressure cooker and you're pushing all of that shit down. Eventually the shit is going to explode everywhere, and that's what happened. And I became unemployed. I put all of my money up my nose and drank it. I just didn't care.
I stopped caring.
Mm. And I stopped looking after myself. And I lost, I crashed my car. I lost everything bit by bit, although the wheels of my life were just slowly came off, and I ended up my family weren't talking to me. I ended up homeless, addicted to drugs and alcohol, and smoking crack in a derelict building with a bunch of strangers, And when I see people that are still kind of in that situation now, I ask myself, what's the difference? That could have been me, to stay there. And I've seen a lot of people die. I've lost a lot of people along the way through either taking their own lives or the drugs have got them in the end, or the alcohol, and they've died from their addictions. So I feel like I don't know what was the difference between me and those people.
Yeah.
Maybe I had some sort of fight left in me.
Yeah.
And it took me to take my life, try really kind of badly attempt to take my life in 2015, and I got sectioned then.
Right, okay. And what age were you then?
So it was 2015, so, oh my God, well, maths.
Nine years ago.
Yeah, so I'm 42 this year.
Okay, so about 32-ish, something like that.
Yeah.
That means, what they've done there is they've recognised now she's an adult. She's tried to take her own life. Let's put her into some sort of section.
Keep her against her will.
Well, we could have sorted this out when she was about medication. 15.
Shove medication down my throat. Shove medication down my throat. Mm.
So you were held against will. You were sectioned. Yeah, yeah.
I was in a secure
unit. And who sectioned you? The hospital, like family or?
Yeah, and police had to escort me to there.
Police,
So I wanted to go home and finish myself off. Angry. I was angry that I woke up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Really
They just kept you in there to try. Well, obviously, they're trying to make you better at that stage anyway. And then how was that process? I mean, I've never been sectioned.
Mm.
How was it? What's it like being in one of those places?
God, it's just mental. It really is. Yeah. Like, it is like prison, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't go outside, didn't have a window or anything like that to open. So you've got no fresh air. shoved full of medication, you know, didn't get any like counselling in there or anything like that.
Okay.
And I was like, nah, man, I need to get out of here.
Yeah.
So I pretended I was fine. And I just, I told them what they needed to hear.
Yeah.
And I said I wouldn't discharge myself. I'm discharging myself. Well, I need to go. Yeah. I'm fine. Yeah. I understand this about myself and I'm ready to go. So basically I just blagged my way back out. But in that hospital, I had like this mad awakening. Like if you believe in spirituality or a higher power or something, I actually like went to get my food after 3 or 4 days of not eating, still covered head to toe in my own blood because I refused to wash. So I was like, oh, I'm kind of hungry now.
Yeah, after 4 days.
Ventured out. Yeah, just all, you know, woe is me. Yeah. I don't want to be here. Went back to my room and this white feather was in the middle of my big book of AA, a big blue book, if anyone's familiar with that. And I just dropped to my knees. I just dropped. And like there's something that I felt a jolt in my body and I just...
Like a little
everything
shift.
Everything opened and I just sobbed like I'd never, ever sobbed before. And it all come out, all come flooding out. And I looked in the mirror. I was like, who are you? Like, I don't, you know, what are you doing with your life? Like, you know, and I was, that was the pinnacle moment of change for me. And I was like, well, I need to get out of there. And I started to rebuild my life. Bit by bit, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, which I don't really personally believe in that. For myself, that diagnosis.
If you look at my life,
all of that trauma, all of that high cortisol and everything in my body, so what, you know, what does that do? It creates widespread pain, it creates inflammation. My body basically shut down because I was given a safe space to go, oh. So what do you do? Then you go into shutdown mode, which is what happened to me. And I took the steps to slowly keep rebuilding my life. And 2020, I became a published author for the first time, a best-selling author. Like I started my podcast as well in 2020. And it was on one of my episodes, a lady who has ADHD and she's also researched it loads. And she's like, she does loads of things in Wales, like for ADHD. And she goes, Jenny, are you ADHD? I was like, what?
What's this ADHD thing?
No. So and the seed was sown.
Yeah.
And I just thought ADHD was, you know, hyperactive
kids. Not, yeah.
You know, the classic naughty boy thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, women didn't really have it, did they? Because it's different. Obviously, it displays itself different in young women than it does in young boys. Yeah. The boys are just naughty and the girls are a bit more withdrawn.
So, yeah, it's an internal hyperactivity because it's the constant, or girls are more inattentive. So they're like the daydreaming and things like that. So, but 2018, I ditched all the prescribed medications.
Okay. And so you must have been with bipolar, I take it, you were on the mood stabilizers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I was I was on a cocktail of 5 different drugs.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And did you feel better for taking that? Was it just...
No. It didn't work because I didn't need them.
No. They weren't the right drugs. No. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not against medication or anything. And I think holistically, so I've been a holistic therapist alongside all this stuff for 22 years. Like that was always my passion subject.
Yeah.
The brain and the body and how it works and everything. So when I could go to these professionals, I would very easily convince everybody that I'm very well.
Yeah. you know the right things to say. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, blagger. Can't blagger blagger, right?
No.
I've been a blagger all my life.
Same.
So it was nothing new
to
me.
That's being an entrepreneur. I think part of being an entrepreneur is being able to blag it for like the rest of your life.
So I stopped taking all of those meds and I discovered then what ADHD really was. And I was like, oh, this really sounds like me. And I started the process then in, I think it was 2021 by the time I decided, oh, maybe I might put in a referral thing. So I went to see my GP and I explained the situation. I filled in two forms and it took a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The waiting list was, back then it was less because, you know, the influx. Now I think in Bedfordshire it's 5 years. Wow. Yeah, on an NHS waiting list, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, so mine took about 2 years from start to finish, the whole process.
Yeah.
From initial GP to psychiatric diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
Of combined type ADHD. So I have the hyperactivity and the inattentiveness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then once I was able to kind of understand that and unmask a bit of my ADHD, I discovered I'm actually autistic as well. And I'm slightly dyslexic.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did you notice the difference? Because I'll be honest, I don't know how, I know a lot of people do have the ADHD alongside the autism as well.
Mm-hmm.
What symptoms were different from the ADHD with the autism that you like noticed about yourself?
So obviously like the autism has changed with the way that they look at it now, mm-hmm. from when they did a while ago. So now it's considered a spectrum.
Yes.
So, you know, I would be considered as very high functioning because I can be confident. I can be okay in some social situations, but I've learned to do that from mimicking.
Yep.
Yep. I've learned to observe people.
What you should do.
Yep. And I'd even, if I was going to somewhere, I'd even like say, well, what do I wear to a certain event?
Yeah.
And I'd look then online to see, oh, and then I'd buy something or wear something that I would then be able to fit in to that event or the place that I was going. Mm-hmm. So I, part of my like unmasking journey has been, who the fuck am I?
Yes.
Right? Who am I?
Yeah.
And what do I like? So I would put up with so much stuff. Like I'd put up with clothes irritating me. I would go to social situations because I thought I had to. I would have like long nails, painted nails as a woman because everyone, I thought I had to.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd wear like loads of makeup and little skirts and things like that because I think, that was what was portrayed to me. That's what women look like. And that's what it was supposed to look like. But as a kid, I was very much a tomboy.
Yeah, yeah. And I just wanted to be comfortable.
I was a bit of a little hippie, you know. And
yeah.
But that, I got bullied for that.
Mm.
And I got called,
suppressed it.
And I've always been outwardly queer as well, like since I can remember. So in like my sexuality is really fluid. So I still call myself queer. It's okay. Like, am I gay? Am I a lesbian? Am I bisexual?
Turn down to the person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't identify with pansexuality because if I don't know, the word doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah. So what's pan's got to do with it?
Peter Pan.
It might have been Peter Pan.
I'm not Peter Pan. Although I'm a big kid all the time.
Yeah, never growing up.
There's a 42-year-old kid.
I suppose you think like you've got, like, I suppose that with the autism diagnosis as well, it's sort of like a freedom to say, actually, I'm allowed to be who I want to be now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? I've been trying to hide this identity for so long. And you were able to discover who you were. Like, because you still didn't really know, I suppose. And
I
just so used to trying to fit into those norms and not having your own opinion. Yeah. And, you know, so.
So we're taught from a very young age to socialise in a certain way. We're taught to, like, be professional in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So I've really changed the way that I show up, like on my socials. I've changed the way I show up in my business. Like, and for me, trying to do it somebody else's way, for very, very restricting. And it just didn't work. And it caused me a lot of anxiety. I've always struggled with anxiety. I've always been like very blunt and not really had a filter. I'll just overshare, like, bleh.
Yeah.
Verbally. I'll assault you with my words.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Just totally trauma dump over. And I've just been quite eccentric and quirky and awkwardly weird. And I've learned to really accept me. That was a massive part of my journey, was acceptance of of who I am. And I found, instead of trying to make everybody else accept me and over-explain myself and worry about what other people think of me, which is a thing, which is
definitely a thing.
Because, you know, you've got rejection sensitivity. I massively have that.
Okay.
So it's like, what if I'm getting it wrong? What if I'm, what if they don't like me? What if have I been too weird? And it's like those things keep you awake at night, man. It's,
I think everyone has that. Obviously, no one likes rejection at the end of the day, but it's when it's hyper sensitive to rejection.
But it's even perceived.
That's like rejection. The stuff that's going to keep going over and over and over. You're reliving it constantly. Yeah.
So it really holds you back.
Yeah.
You know, because you think,
oh, you've talked yourself out of it before you've even left the room and stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I've done like a load of cool things now that.
What cool things you done? I like cool things.
Well, I just brought an ambulance, didn't I?
That was cool. That was cool. I was like, oh, she's driving an ambulance. I love
that. I sold my car last year and I thought, you know what? I bought an ambulance.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it up to take parts of my business on the road, like parts of my podcast on the road, and just, I feel like I just want to be free
from and all you're those structures. You've literally got all of those.
Yeah.
You're just finding your own little journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've obviously, and I mean, the best thing as well, coming from all this trauma and all this like discovery, is also being able to send the message out there for you and be able to help others to understand that, because a lot of people are using drugs and alcohol as a mask of other sensory problems that they don't understand.
Yeah.
And, you know, diagnosis has been given out with other problems as well, like bipolar, I think one that's massively overlooked. Yeah. Because I've been diagnosed with that you know, now it's like ADHD, is it this, is it that?
Often,
you know,
misdiagnosed
and
women.
You don't need to be taking the mood stabilizers for that. Or I mean, you don't even need to be taking the medication really for the ADHD. That's completely up to you down as a person, isn't it?
So I've chosen not to.
Yeah.
I have tried it. So one thing that kind of annoys me a little bit is that you see these TikToks, you see these reels, and they're using a sound of a busy mind, and then it all goes quiet, you know, because they've taken some medication.
I've not seen any of that.
Yeah,
that's naughty.
And I don't feel that's the right way to. I feel that's giving people kind of this false hope that
that whole like,
this pill, this, you know, very strong controlled drug that you're going to be given, that is in shortage, by the way, as well. Is going to fix your life.
Mm.
It's going to be the one thing that fixes your life. And I think if you found, I don't believe medication is right or wrong. And I believe that everybody has an empowered choice to do what's right for them, no matter what anybody else says.
Yeah.
But I think like having a look at holistic ways to manage, holistic ways to manage your symptoms, maybe alongside that, and definitely like do the trauma work. So somatic work has been the most amazing thing for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in my work, I combine movement, breath work, like the NLP, trauma coaching, rewiring the belief systems, and like meditation. Mm-hmm. So the movement is all about intuitive movement. It's getting out of the head into the body. So I have healed and danced my way through my trauma and like breathed it and like rage released that out of my body.
Yeah.
Because I had a lot of anger. I had a lot of resentment towards, you know, the people that hurt me. And I don't want to forgive them, so they can go fuck themselves.
You're not going to forgive them. You're like, no, just
mate.
Breathe it out.
Yeah.
I love that. That's good.
Fuck you. You know what you did.
It's all easy to say
what you
can forgive.
Yeah.
You know, you try to forgive
it. Myself
yeah,
in that situation.
You try to forgive, but it is difficult to actually do it. Because I know I watched one of your videos and you were talking about digestive health, obviously physical health, aches, pains. Like you're saying, chronic pain.
Yeah.
Fibro. Uh-huh. Is that fibro, is chronic pain to do with your beliefs, like, and how you feel about yourself? Are you beating yourself up actually inside?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's causing all of these problems, because
absolutely.
I've seen some of your stuff, and I truly, truly believe in that. There's, like you say, the holistic approach should definitely be looked into. Yeah. You don't need to just try medication. People that aren't people go to the doctors and expect that to be an educated view.
Yeah.
And it's a one educated view.
It's a psychiatry view.
Yeah.
So it's a brain view.
Mm.
It's not the whole body view. So if you look at holistics or somatics, it's the whole person approach. So if you're constantly tense and you're stressed all the time, you're in fight or flight. And all of that tension, all of that, and you're hiding your emotions, all of that's going to go into your body somewhere. So, you know, maybe your tight hips, your constant back pain without injury, you know, have a look at maybe the root cause of that, that the underlying issue.
Yeah.
I had so much tension in my body. Like I would walk around like this, like with my shoulders, like, because I was so stressed. But I've got these like loop earplugs.
People can't hear.
Yeah, you can. But since I've been dealing with that and I'm masking that over the last, God, well, my healing journey's been like 9 years and counting now of, I always talk about it like a Russian doll.
I love Russian dolls as a kid.
The Russian doll, the big one,
yep,
is your fully masked self with all of your conditioning, all of your limited beliefs, whether you've picked them up from other people, whether, you know, that's been ingrained in you since you were a kid. And you start to think, hang on a minute, that's not my belief. That's not, and then you start to take that layer off. You get a little bit closer. It's like, oh, well, this is, I'm going to change my belief about that. Actually, I am good enough and I can do this. I just need to do it a little bit differently to what other people do. And you start to take those layers off. And then you get to your inner child. You're the little you. That is where all the wounds are.
Yeah.
That's where the wounds are, right? Yeah. So once you get to all these layers, and you start to empower yourself and you start to put in boundaries and you start to say, actually, I don't like the way that you do that, or I don't like that. That's not me. I'm doing it.
I don't want
to
go there. I don't want
to
do this. Yeah.
Yeah. And you get to little you and you start to heal your inner child. And that's where the magic for me happens, is you go through those layers and you go through all of that uncomfortable crap and you start dealing with the grief, you're dealing with the anger, and then you go and get your little child, your inner child, and you grab them and hug them and you bring them home to you. And then you start to really rebuild on your life.
Layers,
and yeah, and become your mature adult self. I wouldn't ever say I'm particularly mature, but
yeah, the better, you know, the better, I mean, version, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So where you are empowered and you're not reacting to people and you're able to communicate your needs.
Yeah. And, in a good wants. Way. Yeah. And that's, I think, a lot of people struggle with, you know, they get hurt so easily by things that probably shouldn't hurt them. And they're also not able to communicate that back to their partner, their family, their friends. And then that becomes a really, really lonely, isolated place. So like you say, working on those inner wounds and knowing how to communicate properly is so important. And that's not fixed by a pill.
No.
That's not done by medication. That's done by inner work. And it's painful. It's tough. And, you know, healing is painful, but the end result is, you know, amazing to have that freedom again. Well, a freedom you've never known, actually, probably. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's like, well, actually, I want to go and live this like completely different life now.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Just the life that you feels right for you, instead of being told how to live your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would love to go try. I mean, I've got... How old are your kids?
So, 21.
Oh, nice.
18.
Out the house.
Yeah. 11 and 10.
Oh, yeah, my daughter's 11. Yeah. So not long until you can get on the road full time.
So that's my plan. I want to go travelling.
Yeah.
You know, and so in my work is like, I work with the three pillars of connection. I've coined this phrase or what have you. I'm like, well, people are so disconnected. We're so disconnected. Like, whether you're neurodivergent or whether you're not, like, human beings, nearly all of us are disconnected right now. When we're getting false connection through things like social media, which I know also then is, on a plus side, is a lifeline sometimes, because when you are that isolated, so I'm not saying never go on social media, but having that, relying on that solely is false connection. So the first pillar of connection is connection to yourself, like doing that inner work, like who am I, what do I like, and how do I want my life to feel? So when I say this, people are like, huh? So how do you want to feel? Like, how do you want your life to feel? And then reverse engineer it and create the life that you want, because that's how you want to feel, right? Do you want to feel constantly stressed out? Do you want to be on other people's time or the, you know?
Yeah, running working, around.
Yeah, for somebody else. You know, what do you want? Like, it looks different for all of us. There is no right or wrong answer, but that's where you got to do that deep work, connection to yourself, you know, through self-awareness and getting to know your body, like, making friends with your body again, like, and accepting your body. Pillar two is connection to others. Find your tribe, like find that community of people that are genuinely supportive, you know, not falsely supportive, that genuinely support you, that they don't want anything from you, just the best for you, and where you're going to be seen, where you're going to be heard, and find those tribes and community of people where that you're given that space to grow for who you are.
Yeah.
And the third pillar for me is nature, like all day long. Like nature connection is so, so healing. We can get so much from being outside in nature, from the sun. You know, we get energy from the sun. We can work with the moon cycles when we are releasing and we're manifesting with the moons. We're being aware of our emotions and then, you know, getting out in the forest by water, in those elements, is like so, so healing. So
I love water.
Those are the three pillars.
Squirrels.
That I work with. I've worked with myself and now I work with my clients within retreats and coaching and things like that. So it's so important. Connection is like the foundation of everything that happens in this world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a few retreats coming up soon, haven't you? I know you're doing something with the man cave in Bedford, are you?
Yeah,
you
I did.
Oh, you did it already?
Yeah, I've done it already. Yeah. Okay. So I hosted a retreat day for men's wellness for the man cave. So I've got another men's wellness retreat in May.
Okay.
April or May. I'm so rubbish. One of dates. Them. Yeah.
In the I'm spring. So
yeah. Which is creating healthy masculinity.
Yeah. Nice.
And it's holding space for men. Like, yeah. I'm
which
really
needs
good at
to
that.
Be done as well, like, not just nurturing. Us women.
Men need nurturing too, yes. Right? They need nurturing and they need space to explore their own emotions and things like that. So, you know, this kind of man up thing that's dead.
Toxic
masculinity and stuff like that. So and that's all like breath work, cold water therapy, stuff like that, nature, and meditation.
So you do contrast therapy as well, don't you? Do you do contrast, hot to cold?
No, I want to.
You want to?
I was talking to you about getting a sauna, didn't I?
Stuff,
I really want a sauna. Cause
do you ice bath regularly?
Yes, I do,
How often?
Once a week, maybe.
Yeah.
But then
I'd love to say I'm someone that does it daily. I'm not.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to lie.
It's horrible. Yeah, it's
horrendous. But I find that's enough for me.
Yeah,
but
same,
then,
yeah.
So one thing I love to do is like a self-care ritual. So I'll have like a goddess bath, a hot bath with salts and candles and everything. And I'll just play around in the water and I'll exfoliate and everything.
Yeah.
But then
love that one.
I'll get up and I'll put the shower and freeze in. So I'll flush it all out then with the freezing cold water. And then like spend time like connecting my body, moisturising and like just
Those moments are so important.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I can do cold showers though. I'm just all about the ice bath, but I can't do a cold shower. I find them horrendously painful.
Oh,
see,
I like them.
I suppose they do like shock you and wake you up though.
Yeah. I like that contrast of... I like to put myself through it.
It does. It's literally
like
does. It does. Yeah, it does definitely challenge you.
Yeah.
So I know. So you also have something about sound therapy as well. I saw.
Yes. I'm trained in sound healing. So like drumming, Tibetan bowls.
I love sound therapy.
Yeah.
It's
so good.
Literally the best for me. That was the thing that I just found was my thing.
Yeah.
Like it was so easy for me to relax. Mm. In meditation and in breath work, I do struggle because my concentration isn't there as much.
Mm.
And I don't feel like I'm stimulated as much to keep on track. Sound therapy, literally under 30 seconds. Yeah. Like I'm like in another space for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy for me to connect with that.
Yeah.
Obviously we do breath work with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my thing.
It's so amazing. Balances like right and left brain, balances your energies.
It does.
And the beauty of this stuff is that, you know, we counselling and talking therapies are really, really valuable. Mm. And I think they're stage one. Like once you kind of make sense of it a bit.
That's so true.
But then all of this stuff that's held in your body, you can't access that stuff because your brain is keeping you safe not to even go there.
Yeah.
So for me, that's where my healing happened quite a number of years ago. I was like, whoa, this is it. This is the thing that I love is somatic therapy. So that stuff that's held there can be from this lifetime and or from the past lives. It's unconscious trauma. Yeah. That we carry and we don't know about because our mind, our thinking mind, our cognitive brain is not letting us access that because it's keeping us safe from that trauma. So one thing that you'll witness or you'll hear like on your healing journey or through other people talking about their healing journey is I kept getting all these mad dreams or these mad memories that have popped up. Because it takes off those layers, you see, and it brings stuff to the surface. And sometimes that's painful. But what I've found is I've been able to access joy. Because when we're hiding all this stuff and we've got all this trauma, it also blocks us off from joy, love, happiness, connection. And when you start to peel that layer off, I've remembered some amazing memories from my childhood that I just blocked out.
Yeah, because I have no memories. I've blocked them all out.
That is a sign of trauma, people.
Yeah,
when
we
can't remember.
It is, and that's what people say to me. They'll say, "Do you remember this cartoon? Do you remember this doll?"
Yeah.
I can't remember anything.
And it'll be like, in there somewhere.
Yeah, it's in. And occasionally I have little glimmers, and I'm like, "Oh, I remember the jibber jabber." I don't know if you remember jibber jabber, but like most things, I don't remember. I genuinely don't remember watching cartoons. I don't remember any of the stuff that was around then because I obviously still haven't unpeeled those onion layers one day.
So I had a VHS tape, yes, that's how old I am,
of
a sing-along to The Bare Necessities. So it was a Jungle Book sing-along and I would, there's another sign, look, of course I'm neurodiverse. I would repeatedly watch it
time after time.
And I can remember it.
Transfixed.
The Bare Necessities of Life.
Best
and following
ever.
The little bouncy thing with singing along
to
it.
Yeah,
like,
I remember that.
Like that is one of my favourite Disney tapes. Memories. But was I doing that? I was doing that probably to escape or regulate. Let's regulate.
Yeah, to just be calm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basically sound therapy through bare necessities when you're a child,
I was doing it, the things.
You already knew.
But our body holds so much innate wisdom that we just forget about or we don't access that because we've forgotten about like the wisdom that the body holds. So for me, what I encourage people to do is not have all these props, you know. It's your body, your breath and your energy and your movement. Like we don't need anything else.
No.
We've got so much power in us to heal.
To unlock it. Stuart, what time, I don't know what the time is. There's not a clock on here. Oh, okay, cool. So is it coming up to 12? Yeah. Okay, I have to wrap up. The mind and the body is just so powerful. So if anyone would like to reach out to Jen, we'll tag her socials and everything, her retreats. I'll be going to a few. I might even do some vlogs afterwards as well because I've started vlogging now, so I'll add some stuff and content from your retreats. And if you have any other questions and stuff, then obviously just send us a little a message on Instagram and we'll maybe do like a Q&A or something like that along the way. Thank you so much for coming today. And I'm going to go look inside your ambulance now.
Yeah. Do you know what her name is?
No.
Fanny. Do you want to come in my fanny?
Let's go. Stu, are you coming in her fanny too? For fuck's sake. Right, we're done. Thank you.